We're joined now from Tehran by Marzieh Hashemi. She reports for Iran's Press TV. Ms. Hashemi, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, Scott, no problem.
Ms. Hashemi, as someone who reports for Iran's Press TV, how do you characterize the events of the past month?
Well, it's been, the very least to say, quite interesting. I can start from, pre-election. Let's start from the pre-election was actually quite an exciting time in Iran. It showed just very vibrant type of political activity. People outside in the streets supporting their various candidates and very, you know, perhaps they're out at the same time, supporters of two different candidates. But it was all done very tongue-in-cheek type thing, no major problems, no major issues or whatever. And, of course, then on Election Day, it was just something unbelievable and unheard of, I think, the world over. The crowds, the lines, it was quite unprecedented. And wherever we went, we saw these unbelievable lines. So things went pretty smoothly on that Friday. And then it basically started, I think, the Friday of the election when one of the candidates announced that he had won, and this was prior to the polls closing. I think that set up a lot of things at that point. And then on the next day, when it was announced that Ahmadinejad had won, and then Mr. Mousavi, Mr. Karoubi, especially those two, said that basically there had been some cheating, and that from then on it deteriorated, basically. So that set up the unfortunate few days after that, the scenario basically where the main supporters of Mr. Mousavi started going out on the street, and unfortunately we had some violence in the street. And I do think that it was fanned by, you know, I can say for being in the media myself, that there were a lot of things that were being shown at the time, and a lot of people here, majority of Iranians in Tehran, at least northern Tehran, they do have the satellite. And I think that that was one of the reasons that the government decided to take a move on that, because they felt that it was just basically fanning the fire, a lot of the way that the things were being reported. So, and unfortunately, we had several days of violence dealing with that, with riots, with people in general feeling that their votes had not counted. But I want to reiterate that that is, for the most part, northern and western Tehran, that that was the majority of people who were coming from those areas, because in general, I've traveled throughout the country since the election and everything, and people from other cities are very, very upset with the what they call the Tehrani mentality, that the Tehranis feel that they represent the whole country. And they were quite upset that they felt then that their vote would not be counted, because if there was going to be another vote, as Mr. Mousavi was calling for, the annulment of the previous vote and to have another election, the other people in the other cities were extremely upset with that, saying basically there was no reason for him to call for that, and there was no reason for the Tehranis to be carrying on the way they did.
And now, are you suggesting that what the rest of the world in many ways saw as big crowds and long lines who were voting for change in Iran was actually an outpouring of support for President Ahmadinejad?
First of all, it was a support for the system, because if you do not accept the system, if it's not legitimate, then you do not go out and vote. I mean, and that's basic 1 + 1 = 2 all over the world. I mean, for the most part, if you don't believe in the system, if you don't think that there's a certain amount of honesty in the system, why would you go out and vote? So when you go out and vote, you're saying that, one, you accept the system, and if there's any change that you want to bring about, that you can do so within the framework of the system. So I feel that the 85% of the electorate that voted was definitely symbolic of saying that they obviously support the system. Now, within that, of course, when they're voting, depending on the candidates they want to vote for, okay, one may want one Mousavi, one Ahmadinejad, one Karoubi, one Rezaei. I mean, that's up to the individual. But in general, you're saying you accept the system. And I think that that's what happened after that, when it was said prior to the polls closing that Mr. Mousavi said that he had won. And then at that point in time, it set up this whole scenario that basically, okay, so now that I didn't win, there was cheating, you know. And it was very interesting. Initially, he did not call for a recount. He never called for a recount. He called for an annulment. He called for a new election. So that was the basic situation here and caused a lot of the chaos that happened right after the election.
You may be familiar with the study that was done by electoral and demographic experts at St. Andrews College of, of Great Britain that cast real skepticism on the veracity of the reported returns. I wonder if you have any reaction to that.
Well, I mean, of course, we have, you know, there were many polls that were done. Also, there was one out of the U.S., I don't have the name with me right now, that was done about 2 weeks prior to the election and basically said
But let me ask you about the one that St. Andrews did right after the election.
Did they cast skepticism on it?
They did. They looked at returns from various what they consider to be sample areas around the country. I'm probably telling you something that you know, and they said based on what the vote totals had been a few years ago and other various factors, they just didn't add up.
Right. Well, I think that there were individuals from various councils we had from the dealing with the election, Ed, and they came out and they explained different points. One of the points that they had made, first of all, was percentages in different areas that they felt it didn't add up. And one of the explanations that were given was that because Iran is an open country election, meaning that I don't have to particularly vote in Tehran, even if I'm registered in Tehran, I can be traveling elsewhere or I can be a student elsewhere and I can vote wherever I am living or wherever I happen to be at that time. So that had a lot to do with some of the discrepancies as compared to previous years. And, of course, there's been some demographic changes and everything. But I think that that was one of the main factors that Mr. Mousavi had pointed out and was saying that, for example, there was one at one place that was like 102, 103%. And it was basically, how can that be? Well, you had an exceptional amount of interest in this election. And just about anybody who could vote did vote. And I think that especially with, you know, the young people, and we have a lot of universities all over the country and kids who are from, for example, Tehran or elsewhere, but are going to the university in a particular region, and they voted. And so there was no reason to doubt what was said just because of the high numbers that we saw out there. You know, we had people throughout the country and prior to the election and after the election and talking to many people. That's what's been very interesting to me because going into it, I wasn't exactly sure what had happened. But after going out and talking to people, the majority of Iranians have been very, very upset with what has happened. And I can say upset at basically everything falling apart right after the election the next day and not accepting the results. I think that what is shown many times in the West, for example, when people saw that there was a very large demonstration supporting Mr. Mousavi, people got the feeling that the country was falling apart and that the majority of Iranians actually supported Mr. Mousavi. No, the majority of them did not. And the other side of the spectrum has not been shown as much, I believe.
But when you say the majority of the country supports President Ahmadinejad, is that based on the result of the vote, which is in dispute?
Yes, I think it's definitely the result of the vote. Based on dispute, anytime you have a dispute or you're trying to discredit something or you disagree, you have to give reasons that can be backed up. You have to give concrete examples of why you think that something is or is not legitimate, is or is not just. And from what we have seen over the last few weeks of the things that have been brought out from both sides, in general, I think the overall perspective in Iran is that Mr. Mousavi or Mr. Karoubi have not been able to prove that there was any cheating, widespread cheating or anything like that. I don't think that they have been able to prove that. And I think that the majority of Iranians, and this is from being out and going out and talking to people in the various cities, are very turned off by what they have seen from Mousavi and are very upset at the violence and, unfortunately, the loss of life that was caused because of the aftermath, what happened after the election.
As I understand it, the Constitution of the Islamic Republic allows for peaceful protest.
Mm-hmm.
Why has there been what I, to be neutral about it, a forceful crackdown?
Well, I think, of course, I'm not in a part of the government to make a decision on that. From what I understand, basically, it was a security issue. Islamic Republic is 30 years old. It is not a country like, for example, the United States. United States being, for example, I'm just giving a comparison and trying for everyone to understand the difference. United States, 270 million people, a vast land, and yes, people are allowed to peacefully protest or whatever, okay? I mean, I was there and anti-war demonstrations, huge anti-war demonstrations, Washington, New York, or whatever. And if you're not even there, you know, you may not even know what has happened, and nothing is, many times it wasn't even reported, or it was reported like hundreds gathered, and when it was, you know, 100,000. So there's a big difference when you have a country like Iran, that is 30 years old, that all the eyes are on Iran all the time. And we have to say that there have been many, many incidences over the 30 years of trying to destabilize the government. So when you have a very sensitive situation, sometimes you have to make that choice based on the security of the country. There was a total lack of security in the initial days. There was no crackdown on the demonstrators. They were allowed to demonstrate, and they were requested at that time, though, to let it be solved through the legal processes, because it was something that was totally disruptive. You know, one day the pro-Musavi people would be out there demonstrating, and the next day they, you know, the pro-Ahmadinejad people would be out demonstrating to counter that demonstration. And it was just total disruptive of life and businesses and normalcy. And the government made the decision. They said, listen, okay, this is going to be solved through the legal channels, and that's the way we're going to go, because also, at the time, there were a lot of things that just did not add up as far as a natural Iranian reaction. And I will say, for example, there was the day that there was a suicide bomber inside of the Imam Khomeini mausoleum. And Iranians don't kill themselves like that. I mean, it just doesn't happen. This is not a Wahhabi type of perspective, you know, just to go out like that. So there was a lot of things that did not add up, and that there was some foreign intervention behind it, and that it was going to, you know, explode. And so people were demanding, you know, I was out there and I witnessed the demonstrations that were demanding security forces to actually crack down. They were saying, give us, you know, we want security. People were not feeling secure to go on the streets in the evening or at night, and that's just not lifestyle in Iran. And in general, it's a very secure place as far as going outside. So I think that was a decision that the government made, and they felt that it was in the best interest of the country.
What convinces you, Ms. Hashimi, that there was foreign intervention or foreign elements at play in the demonstrations?
Well, one of the things I just mentioned, for example, basically with the one example was I said, for example, the suicide bombing. It's just very incongruent with the mentality of the Iranian, and that's just not the tactic or style that is used inside of the country or in Iranians in general. Two, for example, being in the media, I will say that the role of the media, just so unbelievably biased reporting for no reason unless they're trying to cause some instability. And just trying to put it that, you know, the regime is coming apart, the regime is falling, there is no freedom, everyone is frustrated, 30 years of frustration. And this, and it's like, okay, 30 years of frustration, 30 years they've been a gangset. However, 85% of the electorate voted just 2 weeks prior to that time.
Well, but the sensation with a lot of people around the world is that a substantial number of Iranians were voting for change.
See, again, we get back then to the premise that even if you're voting for change, for example, the Americans this time voted for Mr. Obama. They voted for change. Okay, fine. They did not vote for McCain, but they still accept the system. They did not question the system in that way. They did not want to bring down the system. This is the thing that I'm saying. This is the basic premise, that they support the Islamic Republic. Otherwise, within it, they would not have voted. Because if you do not accept something, you don't participate in it. Because you don't accept it, and you would question if you really feel that it is so dishonest and there are no rules or whatever, then you're not going to even participate in it because you won't legitimize it.
Why throw out the international press?
Because I think that according to the government, what was said was that they felt that it was basically doing more harm than good as far as the security of the country. And they made a decision based on the security of the country that they felt that it was just with the international press at that time, it was blaming the fire. I guess according to what the government has said, they felt that a lot of the media was fanning, adding fuel to the flame. And so the call that they made, they felt that they had to put out the flame. You have to save the building at all costs. And that's what they made that call, that there was more harm coming out of the international press than good, right or wrong or whatever. This was their call. And it was a call that was made. There was a lot of pressure being put on the government by a lot of the average Iranians who felt that security was deteriorating rapidly. And they wanted them to crack down. They wanted their country secure. And they wanted life to get back to normal. Whatever the government felt that it would take within reasonable limits, they wanted them to do it. And, if throwing out the foreign press meant, I'm saying, talking from, I would say, a lot of the average Iranians that we've talked to, if throwing, not allowing the foreign press to be in for a certain period of time, if that's what it took to get the country back under control and stability and life back to normal, then so be it. And so I think that the average Iranians you would talk to right now, for example, now that life has returned to normal, was like, okay, fine, if that's what it took or whatever it took, within reasonable limits, it's fine, because they wanted life to return back to normal.
And human rights organizations, as I don't have to tell you, around the world are alarmed at the arrest detentions of people identified as politicians and journalists and bloggers and human rights activists.
Right.
I realize those are all different categories, but why is it necessary to arrest people like that?
Well, once again, I'm just speaking on my own. I don't know what was in the minds of those who made the decision or whatever, but I'm assuming that they felt that, again, that it was a security issue. There are individuals that they felt that were masterminding a lot of, for example, it wasn't just demonstrations, it was total destruction. I think that a lot of people don't know the other side of the spectrum is that, buses were being burned, ordinary people were being beaten, ATMs, banks were being burnt down. I mean, it was very, very destructive in what was happening. So if they felt that these individuals, through their emails, through blogging, via whatever, that they were behind it or organizing it, then they detained him, rightly or wrongly. I don't know how many of them have been charged, how many of them have been released right now, whatever. But I'm just saying the reason behind the arrest was because they felt that it was adding to insecurity in the country.
So you don't feel freedom of expression is being stifled in Iran?
I think freedom of expression, I think the average Iranian feels very free to express themselves, okay? But I think that within the framework of the laws in this country, and in each country has its own rules and its own laws. So freedom of expression, I think that through time, there are certain times, especially in emergency situations, difficult situations, that governments all around the world are going to make certain decisions. Now, perhaps in a regular situation, regular times, no, that decision would not have been made. But they felt that it was necessary to do what they had to do in order to have the country, secure and to have stability in the country.
Ms. Hashemi, I thank you for all of your time.
You're welcome.
Marzia Hashemi reports for Iran's Press TV.